Welcome to
Pilot Episodes.
Welcome to Pilot Episodes, where every episode is new. We are a youth panel at the RAF Museum, London, and today's topic is VGA Day and the Far East Campaign. We've spent this week creating an exhibit at the RAF Museum in London, which is available for all of you to view for the next 12 months, before, of course, we inevitably tear it down and put up a new one. It is currently the 80th anniversary of this event, which is why I've decided to focus on this topic. And for this episode, we want to dive into the personal stories that surround VGA Day itself, and a campaign in the Far East that we didn't get a chance to delve into in our display. I'm Mitchell Ford, a mentor at the Royal Air Force Youth Panel. I'm joined by a few members of the youth panel. And today is our pilot episode of Pilot Episodes. So just to introduce everyone, we've got Willow.
Hi.
Nanette.
Hi, guys.
Aditi.
Hello.
And Amelia.
Hey.
Let's start our podcast off then with aircraft focus. So we're going to start off aircraft focus, where we talk about the role of a particular aircraft. We essentially talk about the sort of statistics with it, the stories with it, and any sort of interesting facts we have with it. And we are part of the Royal Air Force Museum, so we do have to talk about planes. It is mandatory. So, for today, we have selected the CAC Wirraway. Amelia, would you like to talk more about it?
Of course. So, the CAC Wirraway is a training in general purpose military aircraft, and it was manufactured in Australia by the CAC, which is the Commonwealth Aircraft Corporation, and it was used extensively by the RAF in the Pacific during the Second World War.
That's a very interesting name, Wirraway. Where does it come from?
So it's actually an Aboriginal term, and it means to challenge. And this is kind of our plane of the day, because this aircraft is also credited with beginning the Australian aircraft manufacturing. So sorry. This is now a big industry in Australia and shows how warfare can have a really big impact on the lives of people at home.
Thank you very much. That, interestingly enough, links very well with our theme of the day, which is essentially the effects of warfare on people's personal lives. In making our exhibit this week, we've had the chance to look at various different items from the RAF Museum London's archive, and we've seen quite a few items of interest. To start us off then, we have an item of interest from Willow. Would you like to talk about it?
Yes, of course. Thank you so much for having me on. When we went into the archives earlier this week, we found a record written by Shirley Ann West. It's a record that recounts her earlier life in Burma, modern-day Myanmar, in the city of Rangoon, which today is Yangon. She wrote it as an adult, but it's about the events of her life when she was about six and a half in the very early 1940s. So obviously, as a six-year-old child, she didn't have a job, but her father worked for Burma Railways, which was the railway company within the country that was run in part by the British government, who were in charge at the time. In the lead-up to the Second World War, particularly around Pearl Harbor, there was a lot of anxiety and pressure building up within Burma. It's very close to Japan, and unlike Britain, which has the English Channel separating us from Germany and mainland Europe, Japan had already started making advances into Southeast Asia at the time. So everyone was very wary of any impending attack.
They'd certainly invaded a few places already, like Manchuria and Taiwan and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's very understandable that everyone in Burma was quite on edge. It got to the point when the war had started where there were a lot of air raids pretty much nightly, which I can't help but connect to London's own experience with the Blitz, the key difference being in London we'd sent all our children away to the countryside, but in Burma the children were still living in the city.
Of course, yeah. My grandmother was evacuated in the Blitz.
Yeah, mine was too, funnily enough.
I
can only imagine how scared Shirley must have felt living as a six-year-old in a city that was being constantly bombed.
Yeah, absolutely. It must have been utterly terrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, to go from normal life to war is such a jarring experience.
Absolutely.
She recounts that in her back garden, they had planned to build a swimming pool, but they had to turn it into an air raid shelter. And even then, that wasn't particularly safe because every day they'd have to check it for errant snakes and scorpions that might have invaded.
Summer plans cancelled then.
Wow. Yes.
No, but to think that your only defence against the bombs is a sort of half-built air raid shelter that you're not even sure works properly.
Yeah.
It's
terrifying.
Absolutely, which is probably a big contributing factor to the number of people who just left Burma to find safer places to live, mostly moving into China or India, which were both very close by. Shirley was one of these people, one of these refugees, but unlike most of them, she left really late. She left in February 1942, when pretty much everyone had already gone from the city. In fact, the boat she got on was the last boat leaving Burma, and the only reason she was on there in the first place is because the guy at the ticket office owed her mother a favour and let them on.
That's so lucky.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, what are the chances?
Yeah.
I know, and I keep thinking myself about the number of people who survived or escaped due to small random acts of luck. I mean, it must have been so random, up to chance. I just can't imagine that.
Yeah.
Her father, though, he didn't leave on that boat. He stayed in Burma for another month, working at the railway, destroying the documents so no one would find any of the logistics information and making sure all of his workers were safe. And by the time he completed those tasks, it was too late for him to escape in the boats. So he had to trek thousands of miles through Burmese jungle to get to India, through insects and disease and dangerous plants and hostile conditions. It must have been utterly horrific, that journey.
It sounds very selfless act.
Yeah, it's extremely selfless.
And to stay back to make sure that all of his co-workers were safe is very heroic.
Really heroic, and must have been terrifying for his family as well. Because they had no idea if he was even alive. There must have been so many people who took that same journey through the forest only to tragically die along the road. It was only really because of the assistance of his friend and cook, Sahib Din, that he was able to make it through at all and very happily reunite with his family in Calcutta.
Trekking through a jungle is no easy feat. And when you're fearing for your life as well, yeah, it's unimaginable.
Yeah, I mean, how did he get through it?
I would say a combination of luck, skill, and determination to get back to your family.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's on the holiday trip list to trek through a jungle, eh? Right, so thank you very much for your contribution, Willa. Now, on moving on to our next interesting item. It does not snow in the Pacific, but there is still Christmas. And today we have brought with us a few Christmas cards to talk about. Aditi and Nanette, would you like to talk about a bit more?
Yes, of course. I mean, that's not the kind of thing you usually picture when you think of a war. So it was really interesting and surprising to find out the story behind them. So today we are looking at two Christmas cards sent to an RAF doctor, Dr. McSweeney, and it has a hand-drawn black cat inside a horseshoe. The second one, though more traditional and still handmade, is a drawing of a Christmas village with New Year wishes dated and signed by multiple people. We have some little bluebirds and snow nicely decorating the card. And these cards give us a glimpse of the relationships that had formed behind the curtain at the time. I mean, away on a random battlefield in the middle of somewhere he probably didn't know because we didn't have GPS at that time. Maybe stationed in Burma, India, or even Japan if it was nearer the end of the war.
dealing with intense pressure because he had to deal with tropical diseases, something which they were new to, wounded soldiers, and eventually prisoners of war as well. It was exhausting and emotional, really taxing on the mind and the body.
I can imagine so, not only dealing with war wounds, but dealing with sort of tropical infections and that kind of stuff.
Yes, yes. And these cards were acts of care, essentially, when soldiers, patients, or colleagues take their time to hand-make sign cards for doctors. I mean, imagine in the middle of the war, people took time to really decorate it because it's really intricately done with colors, really colorful, really. I mean, I wish I could draw like that. And there's no military formality to it. It's just a gesture of warmth, humor, and gratitude. It's really meaningful, especially in the context of the Pacific Theater, where it was brutal and really isolating. So it's something that really stands out.
Shows the deep connection that the doctor would have had with all his patients and the importance of doing things like wishing people Happy New Year in such a trying time.
Yes, yes. I mean, that really hits me. In 1944, that's really deep in the war, and it shows that people still took time to reflect on the hope which they had, the little courage and strength they had amidst all the fear. They were trying to hold on to something human, some sort of tradition or some joy, just to get through the middle of the war zone. And it's easy to forget that war is just fought with weapons. It doesn't always have to do with guns and planes or artillery, but it could be small gestures like these which show small attempts to repair and resist despair.
Absolutely, and you can see how people depended on each other emotionally. A doctor like McSweeney, he was probably wearing multiple hats, doing more jobs than he needed to. He was a confidant to some people, a calming, reassuring presence to others, as well as just someone that people could go talk to, because he was someone that that people respected deeply. And you can see that this card is sort of an emotional handshake, whereas where all of his patients are reaching their hands out to him and showing their gesture, their appreciation for him. We see you, we appreciate you, thank you for what you're doing for us.
It sounds like this doctor went through a lot and had a real impact on the people around him.
Yeah, and it shows that that the war is not the battles, the machines, the deaths. It's about the people behind that. It's the people who, the human connection, and how people are try to be kind, and even in the worst of circumstances.
Yes, I mean, it's a reminder that even in war, people still found time to send a little bit of joy. And that joy is what kept people going. It wasn't just about survival, but it was about dignity, community, and connection. And these two little cards, even though small, are very mighty, because decades later, they show us the relationships and connections behind the curtain.
Well, thank you very much for sharing, Nanette and Aditi. Moving on then to our final segment of the podcast, Spork Forts. Spork is the mascot of the Royal Air Force Museum.
Woo!
And the Royal Air Force Museum, London Youth Band. The reasoning behind this is essentially, in the original exhibition made, we were given a spork by the Royal Air Force recruitment panel, and we kept continually trying to find a way to work it in to the display. It's also, however, the mascot of the Royal Air Force Museum Youth Panel, Museum London Youth Panel, due to its ability to be applied to multiple different situations and be effective in those situations, just like the Royal Air Force and just like the Royal Air Force Museum London Youth Panel. The question to finish us off is, what does adaptability mean to you? Could it be utilising what tools you have available to achieve a difficult goal, such as those RAF personnel stranded on islands in the Pacific after being shot down? Or maybe something closer to home, winning your five-a-side football league, baking a cake. Thank you for meeting us in the air. Chocks away.